We're going hopping today with things are popping. The Philadelphia way, we're going to drop in on all the music they play on the bandstand. We're going swinging, we're going to swing in the crowd, and we'll be clinging and floating high in the cloud, phones are ringing. My mom and dad are so proud, I'm on bandstand. And we'll jump and hey, I may even show them a handstand. Because I'm on the American bandstand. And we'll dance real slow and show all the guys on the grandstand. What a swinger I am on American bandstand. We're going hopping today with things popping. The Philadelphia way, we're going to drop it on all the music they play on the bandstand. Making my mark. Jeebus John is jumping. They made such a fuss just to see the rhyme. Hey, Mr. Dick Clark, what a place you've got here. Swell spot, the music's hot here. Press to the east, give it at least 75. Now for all you Joes, here goes my American handstand. Because I'm on the American bandstand. We dance real slow, I'll show all the guys on the grandstand. What a swinger I am on American bandstand. This thing is crooning, he grips the team, my baby swooning in front of all the TV. And if you tune in, you see my baby and me on the bandstand. We're going hopping today, when things are popping. Philadelphia way, we're gonna drop in on all the music they play on the bandstand. And we'll rock and roll and stroll on American Lindy Hop and Slop. It's American. Tune in, come on, turn on, I'm in, come on.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to introduce to you dancer, actress, humanitarian, and the darling of American Bandstand, Miss Bunny Gibson. How you doing, Bunny?
Hi there, Mike. I'm honored to be on your show. This is going to be fun.
Well, we talked about it for a long time, and since you are part of Americana, because American Bandstand was so near and dear to everyone who loved this music. And we have a whole Southern Florida is really the sixth borough of New York. It's a place where all the baby boomers come together to celebrate their music. American Bandstand is still ringing in their ears. You were born in Jersey City, is that correct?
Yes, at the Margaret Hake Institute for Unwed Mothers.
Uh-huh. Now, you know, I heard that about you. And unwed mother, I guess at that time, to be born of an unwed mother was something that people kind of frowned upon. How did that affect you?
Well, it affected me where when I did find my adoption papers when I was 10 years old, and I ran to my mom. She's coming down the steps and, Mom, this is wonderful. Now I know why he doesn't like me, which is my stepfather.
Hmm.
And now that I know that I'm adopted by him, we can leave. Huh. And she said to me, no, Bunny, she said, you need a father. I said, no. I said, Mom, we don't need him. You're going to be happier and I'll be happier. Well, she said, we went back and forth quite a bit with that. And then she finally said, well, when you get married, I'll leave him. So, how it affected me was at 10 years of age, I started looking for a husband, but who's going to marry me at 10?
Well, so it actually gave you strength instead of pouting about it or whatever. You actually, at that age, intellectualized about it, and you were able to kind of figure it out, which is very intuitive. Now, your mother named you Bunny.
Yes, yes.
Because your name is really Kathleen Elizabeth.
Yes, yes.
Right. A nice Jewish girl from Jersey City, Kathleen Elizabeth Gibson.
Well, I don't know what ever provoked my mom. I mean, I look at my mom as a real pioneer back in those days.
I'll say.
They were certainly trying to convince her to give me up for adoption, and she was not giving me away. Fought the judge, and she kept me. And something about me was, when I was, I have big ears, but they kind of fit my head now. But when I was little, little head with big ears, maybe that's part of the bunny. And I used to be always very active, which I still am today, hopping around a lot.
Right,
you know?
No kidding. So, and they never offered you to work for the Playboy Club, huh?
I was married at the time, or I probably would have done that one.
I hear you. I used to sing at Great Gorge, and I'm telling you, you know, behind the scenes, it wasn't really that, rah-rah, you know, it was just behind the scenes, and, you know, girls that worked very, very hard, that's really the way it was.
I've been to the Playboy Mansion here in L.A.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
Kind of, I guess, because my name's Bunny, I thought it was like part mine as I
I'm
went
telling
to
you.
Grotto and had popcorn served to me on a tray in his movie theater. It was, like, incredible.
Wow, and you didn't try to redecorate. You should have said, okay, you know, this, put the couch over there, and would you mind moving this hutch over here?
Good sense of humor, Mike. I like it.
That's what keeps me going. So you appeared at a swim club, and you were watching American Bandstand, and the dancing kind of intrigued you, and then you went home, and you just learned how to dance.
Yes, I saw, it was the Aden Swim Club, and it was my best girlfriend, Nora, and when we went there, I just saw this whole crowd of people surrounding what I later found out was Arlene and Kenny, screaming, you know, and getting their autographs and people taking pictures.
Right. And by Arlene and Kenny, you mean Arlene Sullivan and Kenny Rossi, who were at that time that darling couple on American Bandstand.
Absolutely. I mean, they were, for me, as I've told Arlene and Kenny, they were like my idols. They did
right.
that. And I went to Bandstand to see them and Justine, and they were, oh, my heavens, there they are in person. So I did go home when my girlfriend said they were American Bandstand. I said, what's that? She said, it's on TV. And I watched that show, Mike, and that was it. I said, I have to go there because there was always, since I was little, my home was not happy, and there was a lot of fighting, and unfortunately, sometimes even the police were called. It was pretty
right. I hear you.
Difficult, but there was something in me that God gave me that I knew something out there. There was something more in life. So when I turned on Bandstand, I said, "Whoa, they look happy, and that's what it is." And I'm going to find a way to get there. Now I was in Darby, Pennsylvania, and
right.
that was at 46 and Market Street. And I'll tell you right now, I can get lost in a closet. For some reason, at 13, I found my way to Bandstand.
So you went. You actually, now at this particular time, you were living where?
I was living in Darby.
Okay, and that was in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And so you, at that time, just made your way to the theater. Now was that being filmed at the Little Theater?
Well, it was being filmed at 46 and Market Street. On the show, they gave the address, and they said you could go down and go to the show.
Right, because they had a theater that they used to call the Little Theater, filmed at the Little Theater. And, I know they had changed the theater at one particular point. That might have been originally when, you know, at one point I know they expanded when they got a little more high-tech.
Oh,
you know.
WFIL Studio B.
Right, gotcha.
I didn't go right down there, Mike. I did practice my dancing with my banister and
right.
the refrigerator door because it defrosted a little bit of food doing it, but it swings in and out as if you're holding a partner's hand.
I hear you.
What's wrong with the food, Bunny? Is something wrong with our refrigerator? you know, but...
Yeah, the milk is warm.
Yeah, right. But I did end up, you know, one day I just waited for them to, both my mother and stepfather work, and it was unusual back then to have a mom working, but
right.
that turned out to be convenient. I heard them with their usual morning argument leave the house,
right.
and I just got up, ate my can of cold ravioli, Chef Boyardee.
Good for you. I love that stuff.
I love that. You know, and...
It was either that or beefaroni. You know, still, I mean, my wife and I have had Italian food all over the world. I'll still buy a can of beefaroni or something and sit in the corner and eat it. She says, how can you do that? I said, you know, takes me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Do you heat it or do you eat it cold?
Yes.
Both?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Either way. Hey, listen, food is my drug. Even though I'm in really good shape, food is still my drug. That's it. It's my drug of choice.
Well, yes. I think mine, besides dancing, it is food. I like chewing.
Right.
Popcorn. I like anything that I can chew, which means I'm probably wearing out my teeth double. But I love it.
You know, Paulette and I have just started to take dance lessons. And
oh,
we're
good.
Just doing, you know, push-pull and a little bit of East Coast swing, you know, triple step. And we're doing foxtrot and whatever. And I'm so confused, Bunny. I mean, you know, I go there and we have private lessons and group lessons. And, you know, but eventually I feel that one day in a couple of weeks, all of a sudden, we're just going to go there and we're going to say, that's it. And it's just going to pop right in, and we're going to just be doing it. So
I've been to dance lessons, and I've helped out some people when they were trying, because it's so much, your mind can't be in two places in one time, and you're so concentrating on the steps.
Right.
Forget, just let the body move to the music and have fun.
Right.
Smile on your face, and you probably will hit that point where you can make that transfer.
Yeah.
If you make a little mistake dancing, there's actually no mistakes. Go with it and enjoy it.
Well, I'm a singer mover. I'm not a singer dancer. And I have a new respect for people that go on Dancing with the Stars who are not dancers, and by the end of that series become dancers, because they work all day long, every day of the week, and they work really hard.
Oh, yes. You know, it was a dream of mine. All the L.A. regulars out here, because they're like our younger brothers and sisters, I keep in touch with them. They're a wonderful group of dancers, and they look at me as like the mama icon from Philly, and they say, go on Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
I'll tell you, Mike, I would. And who knows, maybe it could still be in my future, but I had a car accident, a head-on collision on the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu in 2006.
Wow.
And I'm lucky I'm here, and I'm lucky I walk up steps, and I get around, and I have a dance agent now, and I do a lot of dancing shows, but you're right about Dancing with the Stars. That is, oof.
Oh, yeah.
What a challenge.
Well, I'm going to share something with you. In 1983, I had a head-on collision at 60 miles an hour, and I was not wearing my seatbelt. The engine came into the front of the car. And the only reason that I'm here is because I was not wearing my seatbelt. Car spun. I was thrown to the right side of the car, and I woke up in the hospital. And I was in such good shape that I only had soft tissue injuries. But now, at this tender age now, I'm starting to have trouble with my neck and my back, and the doctors tell me it was because of the impact that I took years ago. So
you're exactly right.
Yep.
Thank you for explaining that, Mike, because the impact on your body is tremendous, and I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's from that jolt that I had, and
I
it does come out when you're older.
But
the things to be grateful for, my car battery came right on my front seat.
Unbelievable.
A little bit closer, I would have lost my leg.
Oh, I hear you loud and clear. So anyway, on a lighter note, you were age 13 and you were a quick learner. As rumor has it, you actually, went to American Bandstand to see Bobby Rydell.
Yeah. Wild one. He was going to be singing. Yep.
Yep.
He was. With all that big poofy hair, he was his records were great. Right?
I love Bobby. He was great. He was a real vocalist. He could really, really sing a song. I mean,
he was
fabulous. And so let me ask you this: how did you get tickets at 13 years old to go see American Bandstand?
Well, you didn't need tickets. You just stood in line, girls on one side, boys on the other, and you know, the only requirement is that you were at least 14 years of age, and if you didn't look 14, they're going to stop you and ask you for your birth certificate.
I see.
And as I was standing in line, yes, he did stop, and he said, how old are you? And I thought he was talking to me, and as I was ready, my knees were shaking.
Right.
The girl in front of me he was actually talking to, and she was 13, and he said, well, you know, I'm sorry, honey, you can't go to Bandstand, and she just ran down the street crying.
Wow.
And then I proceeded through those golden green doors to this magical land that I saw on my television screen at home.
And did they actually hand you beach nut gum as you walked in?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was their sponsor. It was Flavorific. They used to have the IFIC buttons, remember?
I remember. I did go up to Dick's Saturday night show and the IFIC bud, that whole thing. Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, I have a good friend, Larry Chance, in those days, and he was a Philly guy, and he was Larry Figueredo in those days. And Larry was the lead singer. Of course, I just saw him on Saturday, last Saturday. He was the lead singer for the Earls and had all those hits, Remember Then and Never Fall in Love Again. And believe it or not, he danced on American Bandstand before Dick Clark.
Well, with Bob Horn?
That's correct.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he told me that story. He actually went to elementary school with Ernest Evans, Chubby Checker, you know, and Bobby Rydell, and Frankie Avalon. Both of them played the trumpet in elementary school, and they all used to walk home together, the four of them. Isn't that interesting? They were all in class together. He said that Chubby Checker used to sit behind them. And, of course, you know, it was Dick Clark's wife that named Chubby Checker after Fats Domino.
Yeah, exactly.
Only you and I know.
That was her favorite, I was told.
Only you and I know that.
Oh.
Hi, this is Larry Chance of the Earls, and you're listening to, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah.
So every star considered it such an honor to be on American Bandstand, because that was the ultimate appearance. You could never get exposure that was better than being on American Bandstand.
That's right, Mike. And what I thought of just recently was we did not realize as kids the power that we had when we had our record review, our rate of record. I mean, we could either make or break a song by what we gave it.
Right. I mean, that's very, very true, because that was an important part of the business in those days. If Dick Clark gave you thumbs up, you know, that was good for selling an awful lot of records.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
I've heard jokes about American Bandstand's rate of record segment. I can't go to an airport. I can't walk through a shopping mall without somebody yelling, "Hey, Dick, got a great beat. Easy to dance to. I'll give it to so-and-so." Why did you like that?
Well, I've heard it before, and I like the words, and I like the rhythm, so I gave it a 90.
Well, it had a real good beat, and I think the kids would really enjoy it. I think it'll go pretty far.
Well, I gave it an 85. I like it. I like the beat.
Well, I gave it a 90, and I think it's just bop.
I gave it a 90. I felt it had a good beat also, and it was easy to dance to.
I thought it was really easy to dance to, and it had a good beat.
Bob, how did we make up?
The lady 4.5.
can't be an 84.5. It's impossible. 84 1/3. It's the first time we ever had a half. There's three. No, it isn't possible, is it?
No.
Now, I read somewhere that you had a little catchphrase, and you would say, no matter what, and that would take you through as a mindset to accomplish things that you needed to accomplish.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
And I understand that, because even when I was a dean in a tough school and throughout my life, music has always saved me in my life as dancing has saved you in your life. And I always, my phrase always was, whatever it takes, which is very similar.
Yeah.
So when I found that out about you, I found that very interesting. Now, is it true that as a young girl, because you were dancing, and maybe out of jealousy, or maybe out of being a child that was born to an unwed mother, that you actually got a death threat as a young girl?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was at St. Hubert's School. I had no luck in Catholic school, unfortunately, with going to Bandstand, because we went outside the box that I dared to shake my booty on TV.
Right.
So it started in Holy Cross, where I'd walk down the hallway, they would say horrible things to me, and I was scared from the time I got on the bus to the time I went to Bandstand.
Wow.
And after Holy Cross, then I went to St. Hubert's, in Northeast Philadelphia. And those kids remember, I mean, because I have re-met and heard some comments saying, oh, my heavens, were we terrible to money. But they put on my desk a note that if I didn't leave that school, they were going to kill me.
Wow.
And I figured, well, I guess I have good company. Elvis Presley gets death threats, too. But I said to my mom, I can't take it, Mom. Please, would you just send me to public school? So there I was. All my life I had gone to Catholic school, but in my senior year, she did agree to transfer me, which was a little difficult in as much as I had already learned a Greg shorthand, and then I had to learn Pittman shorthand.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. By the time you had changed and gone to public school, you were already a star on American Bandstand?
Yes, yes.
And so that must have been a little bit difficult as well. Because
yeah. Oh, no, Northeast was great to me, Mike. The Northeast is probably was 95% Jewish.
Right, no kidding,
and
wow.
Those kids loved me. And you know, you go out in the parking lot and they had Corvettes. And
right.
And it was a school very well esteemed with the astronaut program.
Gotcha.
There, I was a star and nobody was bad to me. In fact, I even went to a prom from Northeast High School.
Right.
But I never got that reception. Unfortunately, in the Catholic schools, you know, my granddaughter, Leah, she graduated from Holy Cross, and I was part of her commencement some years ago. And within that commencement, I was in the middle of the football field and as an alumni. And the one lady said to me, she says, you know, she said, secretly, we admired you because no matter what we did to you, you were going to go outside. You were standing out on Route 130 with your little hat box full of bandstand clothes, and you were going to bandstand. And we would run home, and we'd be watching you. Now, I never knew any of that.
Well, let me tell you something. I mean, I watched American Bandstand and came home from school and watched it as well because it was my chance to see all of the people that I revered in the music business who later on I would get to share a stage with. But, you know, American Bandstand was the mecca. And just for you to be able to not only dance on it, but you got to meet all of the people that everybody listened to on record. They were there right in front of you.
It was like here they were in our little studio and only held about 200 people, and we were the mecca of rock and roll.
Right. So you surrounded them, and they were actually singing to you.
Lip-syncing to us.
Yeah, that's true, too. You have inside information such as how many takes it took some groups to get their songs down and what would actually go on behind the scenes. I've heard so many different stories about Dick Clark. As far as people having said that he was a wonderful businessman, but there were times when he wasn't so endearing. And other people would say, I had a wonderful relationship with him, and he was very endearing. You know, I guess it just depended on who you were. How would you explain Dick Clark to me as a young girl dancing on American Bandstand?
He was kind of like a authority figure, a father figure.
Right.
He did an incredible job. I've said that I don't think anyone could have brought Bandstand to the 40 years and what he did.
Oh, he was a genius.
Not long. But back then, I mean, we were just little kids, and yes, he was a young, good-looking, handsome man, but he still was like this authority figure, and we were going to make sure that he didn't see us chewing gum or
right.
Or we're not dancing up in the front line for him to call us back because we're getting too much camera time or whatever.
Now that's something that most people don't understand. There actually were rules and regulations as far as camera and behavior and everything else that went on. Now, let me ask you something. What about breaking the color line for dancers on TV? Because I know that was an issue during that time. As far as when in the timeline the color line was broken where you saw a mixed audience or mixed dancers on Bandstand or some of the other Bandstand-type shows?
Well, when Dick came out to L.A., you saw a mixture, and the first black guy to dance with a white girl was in the 70s, and his name
right.
was Famous.
Uh-huh.
But back then when we were dancing... I don't remember seeing any black kids. I mean, there is a book that has just come out. Matthew Delmont wrote a book, The Nicest Kids in Town.
Right.
He just sent me an autographed copy.
Uh-huh.
And he deals with that, about the American bandstand's place with integration. And I think we typified really what was happening around the country. Black kids were not seen dancing on television.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little secret. I had a very good friend who I met in the 60s who had a bandstand type show in New York. And he also was an MC and used to MC shows at Palisades Park. And his name was Clay Cole. Mm. And believe it or not, Clay, as early as the mid to late 60s, had a mixed audience dancing on his show. And, you know, it was very, very interesting because he took a lot of heat for it at the beginning. But he did basically a New York show. He disappeared for a long time after the show was over. He had a Saturday night show, and, mm-hmm. you know, it was very similar to Bandstand, except
yeah,
that...
Yeah, I went to that show once.
On Clay Cole?
Yes.
Yes, Clay was a sweetheart, and I did do a show with him 2 years ago or 3 years ago when we reconnected. I did actually his last interview, and sadly he passed away. And a lot of people missed him. He was really the New York version of Dick Clark, except for the fact that he would get out and dance with the kids.
Yeah.
And
I remember he's a good-looking man.
Very good-looking man and yeah. talented in that way.
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend Mike Miller.
But you see, Dick Clark, as young as he was when he took over, really was the trendsetter for the American modern-day dance show with teenagers. I mean, you know, that's it.
Yes.
And, of course, we had Hairspray, and I'm sure that idea came from the original American Bandstand concept.
Well, I said that to Bob Waters when I met him out here in L.A. And he said, oh, no, that was from my hometown. But when you have someone like with the streak in her hair that is exactly like Carmen and Yvette right. used to do.
I hear you. They borrowed from everybody. I know.
That's pretty close. There was an article a couple of years ago, and it's one of the things that I hold dear in my heart, that there was a little lady across the street from the Bandstand studio, Billy Williams. And she used to watch us and myself. She'd watch me go to Bandstand every day as a teenager. Well, some years ago, I said, gosh, let me just knock on the door and see who lives here still. Well, she's still there. So
wow.
She answers the door, and we reunited after 50-some years. And I said to Billy, I'm going to take you to Bandstand. It's time.
Wow.
So I took her back for one of our reunions. I took her across the street. And she was just thrilled, and Annette Hall, John Hall, wrote an article about that. And it's something that I am very proud of, and Billy has my picture on the wall. And she would recount how she would watch the black entertainers go into the show, and that made her feel really
right.
And she knew that there weren't any black dancers. She was okay about that. Her next-door neighbor, Sylvester, he wasn't okay about that.
Well, I understand that, you know. I really do understand that. As a matter of fact, I've done a lot of interviews since I started the show, and one of the questions that I ask almost everybody was, did you get a chance to do Bandstand? And the big guns would all say, oh, yes, I did Bandstand, and I was on tour with Dick Clark, and, you know, we had so much fun. Now, getting back to Bunny, who were some of your partners on Bandstand that you danced with?
Well, my main partner was Eddie Kelly, and I'm known most that for us as being a couple. And but there was also Johnny Alamia. I danced with Steve Colanero, and some of the other dancers there, Frankie Lobis.
Right.
But I was most known for Eddie, and I guess second would be maybe Steve and Johnny.
Right. But there were some, you know, we had certain faces, and I remember certain faces, you know, that I used to watch when I was younger. But really and truly, you became the queen or the princess, and your face for some reason they decided to put your face on all the magazines. You were on 16 magazine and Dig magazine and Teen Screen magazine, and you couldn't pick up a copy without seeing your face on it. That had to make you feel pretty good.
Oh, it did. I mean, they would come down, the reporters, Mike, to Pop Singer's little drugstore down the corner from our studio, and that's where we would hang out. The reporters would come in from New York, and the photographers, and they would do our interviews. They would stage parties for them to come and do interviews on. And whether it was myself or Pat, I mean, before me, Pat Molitori, Justine, Bob, Mike Bolero, I mean, it's like we would run all to the magazine stands every month because we were in all the teen magazines. And in popularity polls, I have them where there I am, and there's Paul Anka and Elvis, Bobby Rydell, and they're asking who's the most popular for 16 magazine to write in who wins the contest.
Right.
And we're just like, we're these street kids. You know, I think Bandstand actually, the ones that gravitated and made our way to that wonderful, magical kingdom were the ones who most needed to feel like we belonged and that we were loved and we loved dancing.
Yeah, but you know what? Bobby Rydell and Frankie Avalon and the Dovells and Dion and everybody else that's on that list, the kids couldn't relate to them as much as they could relate to regular kids like you, because you represented something that they could achieve. You know, not every kid could be a Bobby Rydell or a Frankie or a Fabian, but they felt closer to you and your dancers that you were friendly with on Bandstand because they could relate to that more.
Yeah, that's true. We were like, they were our surrogate family around the country. We were part of their lives. And it's, when we weren't there, it's like whatever what happened to them, you know, because we were part of their everyday lives. I've met people from down the South. I met them from even when I was in France, and they said, oh, when we would run home from school and pull down our shades, and we'd be dancing with you.
From hip-hopping in bobby socks to bumming in bell-bottoms, for 40 years, teenagers across the country tuned in to Dick Clark's American Bandstand to spot popular trends.
People always love to watch people, especially younger people, see what they wore, what they were dancing to, how they acted toward one another, the hairstyles. This is the number one song.
The beat goes on.
And it was the regulars, the popular dancers who appeared repeatedly on the show, that set many of those trends.
We actually never auditioned dancers. Some of them were good, some of them were awful. And I think that was part of the charm.
Bunny Gibson danced on American Bandstand from 1959 to 1962. To celebrate the show's 40th anniversary, she helped organize a reunion of regulars in Philadelphia, where the show was originally produced. Bunny got the chance to reminisce and jitterbug with her partner, Steve Colanero.
The most amazing thing was when I would go to the magazine stands and see myself listed as America's Bandstand sweetheart, and up there listed with popularity polls with Elvis Presley.
We had fan clubs and fan mail and all kind of presents and gifts and offers to us. Unbelievable.
On the back of 16 magazine, Dick Clark, me, Bobby Darin. Wow.
Looking back, it's still hard for Bunny to believe her fame, but she has no doubts about why American Bandstand enjoyed four decades of success.
Kids love to watch kids dancing. I actually consider us to be like the rock and roll pioneers of dancing.
American
Bandstand aired every weekday afternoon until 1963, when it switched to Saturdays only. It still stands as the longest-running show in ABC's history.
What were some of the tunes that you personally liked to dance to on American Bandstand?
Well, I loved all Chuck Berry and Little Richard and, again, Bobby Rydell, Danny and the Juniors. When you try to do that at the Hop. Oh,
well,
heaven.
John Madara is a very good friend of mine, and he wrote At the Hop and Rock and Roll is Here to Stay. And I talk to him maybe once a week.
Ah.
Yeah. And he's a Philly guy. He actually is working on a movie right now. It's called At the Hop. He sent me the screenplay, and, Sooner than later, we're going to be hearing about a movie called At the Hop, produced and written by John Madara. So,
wow.
It's interesting stuff.
Kenny and the Juniors, they came out here, Ethan and I went, and they took me out for my birthday.
Uh-huh. Joe Terry?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Joe.
He's such a wonderful man.
Sweet man.
And I keep in touch. I talked to Jerry Gross this last week.
I think you'll find it's going to go all the way right up to the top. Danny and the Juniors at the Hop.
Raydell, I did a game show with him. As I see my career full circle, Mike, I really probably would have just fainted or peed my pants if anyone said that the people that I was watching performing at that show that would be a part of, like, my family in later years.
Well, you know, because I talk to Bobby once in a while, and I'd like to get him on for an interview, but he's always pretty busy. I spent some time with the Golden Boys a few years ago, backstage, you know, at a show. And, sweet, sweet guys. I think Bobby at that time, his wife had just passed away. I know he's remarried now.
Yeah.
He had just had a hip operation, and Fabian had just been in a car accident. And,
Mr. Oscar, and I'm friendly with Oscar here. Yes.
Yeah.
It's both okay now. Thank God.
Yeah. You know, that's a good story, but, they certainly are loved, and everywhere they go, people just love them. It's great to see Frankie Avalon come out and go. Could you imagine they called me the Big Kahuna? You know.
Oh.
And he comes out all 5'4" of them. You know. Sweet guy.
When Dick did his 50th anniversary out here, I was sitting at a table right next to Frankie, and it was just a joy. He is as handsome, as young looking.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he said he made most of his money, actually, QVC.
I can imagine.
And he's like, has this big family, and he's a good...
You bet. Kid. His son plays drums for him.
Oh.
And his wife still goes to every show.
Oh, that is so good to hear.
She won't let him out of her sight.
Yeah. Well, whatever that ingredient is, they stayed married, and I've got to respect they've been able to do that.
Eight kids. I think they have eight kids, believe it or not.
Yes, yeah. I think you're right.
I don't know when he had time to do that.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to know from you is, do you have any behind-the-scenes stories about groups that have been on there, either funny stories or faux pas or interesting stories that you've been holding on to all these years that you might want to tell me about?
Well, Michael Testa, I actually had a date with him.
Ah.
I think I was just 15, and he was with the Fabulous Four.
Right.
Very good-looking guy. And he was respectful. He didn't get fresh.
He
didn't try first base or anything like that. But that was a biggie. And then Freddie Cannon, he used to come to the show. And
I love Freddie.
Yeah.
I've worked with him. He's sweetheart.
Well, he is a nice guy. I've heard from Carmen that he actually used to go over to the house and test out some of his songs to see if they were going to be hits.
Wow.
And I think Arlene, I mean, she has her pictures with Paul Anka. And Frankie Avalon once said, you know, do you know how popular you kids are around the country? It's like every venue that they did, they're asking about, are they really going steady? Is this one? Is that one?
Yeah, of course.
And I don't think that we ever, we knew it, but we didn't know it. Because, again, we're just these regular street kids going to our dance every day.
Hey.
And even with our pictures and magazines and everything, I don't think all this hit me or maybe some of the other ones until later years. When you still, then you become aware of how huge that was, what we did.
Oh, yeah. I remember coming home, and when the Bristol Stomp hit, I went, wow. Oh, my God. What a great dance. And I remember the day. I'm standing in front of the TV trying to mimic the steps. And I'm singing. It started in Bristol at a DJ hop and my feet are going. And I remember it like it was yesterday, you know.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to Len Barry over the years and I told him, man, I said, you know, you had my attention that day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I did the Bristol Stomp on that American Wheel on Wheels Gala at the Pennsylvania Museum, and oh, they I was showing them the steps. They loved it.
The kids in Bristol are sharp as Bristol when they do the Bristol Stomp. Really something when the joint is jumping when they do the Bristol Stomp.
And the other thing was, we used to do the slop in those days.
Oh, my God. gosh, yeah, the slop. I like that one.
Oh yeah, and
I'm
no
round to that the beat.
Oh yeah, we did the slop, and you know, you talk to kids now and say, hey man, we did the slop, and they look at you like you got two heads. Or the mashed potatoes, that how big was that when that came out?
Oh, and how hard is that one to do?
You bet.
You have to have strong legs.
Yeah, and you wear the bottom of your shoes out very fast.
Exactly. I actually did the rock and roll show in the 1950s with Steve Carver. They were auditioning in Philly, and I had to do the mashed potatoes again, but this was when I was about, like, I was in my 30s.
I got you.
They saw that I was on Bandstand. I got it right away. But talking about that show, that's really what got me back into the industry.
Right.
I was doing metal sculpture at the time. I thought Bandstand was, that was it. My girlfriend said, gee, they're auditioning for this dance show. Come on down. I said, I'm not going to do that. Well, she convinced me. And I got a call back, and she did the rock and roll show. Loved it. And Chubby Checker was there. I mean, all our greats. And then from there, I said, well, someone said, why don't you join a modeling agency? I said, okay. So I did that. Then I started acting so I'd be a better model. And then said, whoa, I love this. And
that's how
it all started. Again, music brought me back in the business.
I hear you. Well, creativity is creativity. Let's go back now to the 1960s. So you got married at a young age. And it was somebody that saw you on American Bandstand and actually came down to meet you but couldn't get in because he was a year too old.
Well, yes, he was. Don Travarelli.
Yeah, and your parents, and of course you decided to marry him, and your mother wanted you to finish high school first.
Yeah, you're very good, Mike.
That's an interesting story.
She made that one requirement. I was a senior, and I had 6 months to go.
Well, that's because Don Travarelli is really my cousin.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, he tried. So, I mean, he actually fell in love with me watching me dance on the show.
Wow.
His niece Robin, he practices dancing with, and they wouldn't let him in. But he found Carol Gibson, who ended up giving him my number, and that's how we connected. And then
Were you mad at her?
Oh no.
Okay.
It was Puppy Love, which is, again, that's one of my favorite songs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Puppy Love, that was our song.
And they called it Puppy Love. Oh, I guess they'll never know how a young heart, how it really feels, and why I love her so. And they called it puppy love, just because we're 17. Tell them all, oh please tell them it isn't fair to take away my only dream. I cry each night these tears for you, my tears. Is the answer, is it up above? How can I, oh, how can I ever tell them? Oh, this is not a puppy love. Someone help me, please. Is the answer up above? How can I, oh, how can I tell them this is was not a puppy love.
And I was able, with marrying Don, that little message I got when I was 10 years old, that when I get married, my mom would leave my stepfather. She left him some months later.
Wow. And so you had two daughters?
Sure. Yes, yes. Angel and Maria. And Angel is right there in Delray near you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Maria is in New Jersey.
Great restaurants in Delray.
Yeah, yeah. And my daughter Maria's granddaughter, Nicole Weiss, is living with me here in California right now. So Bandstand brought me a lot. It brought me four grandchildren and two daughters.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Actually, you got divorced in 1970.
Yes.
Which we tend to do. I got married at 19. And, of course, you know, we looked at each other one day. We said, who are you?
Well, that's it. Everyone said you're too young to get married, but you don't listen to anybody.
Nope.
But you do. You don't know, you know, you grow apart, and that's it.
Let me ask you something. The dancers were a set group of people that came in and danced, and the fact that they stayed for a while and, you know, the people and the kids around the country got to know who they were, but the actual audience that came in to watch those kids that stood on line, boys on one line, girls on the other, did that change from week to week?
Oh, it changed from day to day.
Yeah.
You know, when Dick wanted to make sure that being that we were in the East Coast, and even if we had a snowstorm, he was going to have his audience there. So that was the beginning of having a membership and getting tickets for the day and being part of the bandstand club. So we were the regulars. So he was sure that we were going to show up. And that's what who the nation followed.
Right.
And they would have busloads, especially in the summertime when the kids were off, bringing kids down to see us.
So he was pretty strict. He ran a pretty tight ship as far as I noticed that through the years it got more and more sophisticated and the sets got bigger and the graphics got better. And, you know, so for a period of time, you were a sculptress.
Yes, that's a metal sculptor. Very good. That's what I was doing when I said to my girlfriend, no, I'm not going to go down there to an audition for a dance.
Wow.
I did that for 5 years, and I did get awards. I used to take, my best thing was the telephone cable wire made of copper.
Uh-huh.
And I would take that from scrap yards and unweave it and make trees out of it.
Wow.
And put them on mineral stones.
Wow.
That I enjoyed very much.
Wow, that's amazing. And then you got into doing some commercials.
Yes, yes. My first commercial, Mike, was for Minute Rice, and I ended up being a continuing character, God bless.
I'm sure that I saw you. As a matter of fact, you know, when I heard about that, I said, you know, I remember that joke they used to tell, you know, your mother's so dumb, takes her an hour to cook Minute Rice.
Oh.
But... yeah, and then Charmin, you did?
Yes, yes.
So did you get to meet Mr. Whipple?
No, I didn't. But
you didn't?
He made a fortune from me being Mr. Whipple, although he didn't. It kind of circumvented his acting career because he was only known as that. But back then, he made about $100,000 a year for that.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, he's not with us anymore, I don't think.
Probably not.
I think he squeezed his Charmin once too many. So, you know, but and then McDonald's.
Yes. Yes, it did McDonald's.
How great is that?
Bank of America. It's after Philadelphia. I mean, I actually taught commercials at Weiss Barron back there. And went to New York, got myself an apartment. Talk about dedication and being driven.
Wow.
I would rent my apartment one day a week to my Philly actor friends who would come up and spend one day of the week so they could do the New York business.
Uh-huh.
I charge them each one $50. I had five of them. And and I would move. I would sublet to all the apartments throughout New York. And it was a fun, exciting life. And
right.
Fortune in commercials.
And
really good.
And then because you like to sit in traffic so much, you moved to L.A.
Well, because I wanted film. And, you know, Mike, I thought when I came out here, whoa, I was so successful in New York.
I
was putting like $100 bills into the box at church in my account.
Wow, good for you.
Just write a check. But I came out here and I thought I could do this overnight. That, oh, mm-hmm. I'm going to just be a successful. Well, it didn't happen overnight. Although I can look at my whole career here.
Yeah.
Be very, very grateful for the projects that I've done.
Yeah. And then of course there is this person, Kathleen Klein. Who is that person?
Well, that's the illegitimate kid who still trying to figure out her name. I think I changed my name 10 times with the thing. They said enough's enough. It's Kathleen Klein. I was Kathleen Elizabeth. Kathleen Bissett. I tried one time.
Oh, really? Did Jackie know about that?
No.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was friendly with Michael Sarrazin, and he lived with Jackie Bissett.
And
she left him for a dancer. You know, we know that story. And he went up to Canada and became an actor up in Canada. He just passed away last year, but he actually was brokenhearted all those years later and was a heavy drinker because he never stopped loving Jackie Bissett. How do you like that story?
That's a good story. Yeah,
do you remember him, Michael Sarrazin? He was in the reincarnation of Peter Proud and a couple of other movies.
Good looking
guy. Yeah, yeah.
Man.
Stuff
here.
Woo. Oh yeah, Kathleen Klein played Megan on my favorite TV show, General Hospital.
Oh yes, I had 3 months I did on General Hospital.
Let me tell you. See, now I have other good friends that were on there. Lenny Welch was actually on General Hospital for a while.
Mm.
And he lives in California now, so there must be like something to this. And Jackie Zeman was married to a friend of mine, Murray the K.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No.
Do you remember Murray the K that used to put on the shows in New York? He was a DJ in Murray Kaufman. He was a DJ in New York.
I hear the name, but I can't precisely say that I listened to the show.
He was a very big DJ. He was on Saturday nights in New York, and he was married to Jackie Zeman, and believe it or not, Jackie got her start by going to sock hops with Murray. He had three wives named Jackie.
Whoa.
You know, it was like Ted Brown and the redhead. You know, he kept finding redheads, you know. But, and of course, you know, everybody ran home to watch Luke and Laura.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, she actually had given me a plaque. She ended up dating my roommate here in L.A.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, and I got a chance to meet her, and lovely, lovely lady.
Absolutely. And, of course, there was Dr. Hardy, who was a baseball player.
Originally. Oh, yes.
Yeah, he played bass. I remember him when he was a ball player.
And I sat next to
John Berardino.
Yes. Well, I did. I worked for the Thalians to help them raise money. That's Debbie Reynolds' group out here.
Uh-huh.
And I had the honor of just sitting next to him at a table at one of the benefits. And at that same benefit, even met Lucille Ball.
Wow.
And Lucy said to me, she said, "You're an actress, right?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Don't give up." I said, "I want Lucy." She told me that 3 times.
Well,
not Lucy. I'm not giving up. She was a sweetheart.
She was the vitamin to Benjamin girl. She really was.
Oh.
You know, my wife has a set of Lucy coffee cups that are collector's items, and I broke one. And I had to go all over the country for months, you know, of course, on the Internet, and I finally found one.
Oh, good. Well,
because I felt so bad. I mean, you know, because my wife likes to drink her coffee out of her Lucy stuff. Well, you know, it's funny, but, you know, I was an educator and I was a dean in New York. And, you know, we'll talk about your film career after that. But believe it or not, I had Jennifer Lopez as one of my kids in the Bronx for 1 year in school.
Really? Wow.
Yep. And she was not a J-Lo then. I'm going to tell you that. That's another whole story.
Wow, yes, she has transformed herself.
Oh, she has transformed. I mean, you know, I look at her sometimes, I don't believe it's the same girl.
You know, I gave her a plaque of just when I did the backup plan with her. I was the lead conga line dancer.
Uh-huh.
You won't see it in the movie, but for 2.5 days, I'm leading that line, and she's like about 6 people behind me.
Uh-huh.
"Bunny, can you land over here?" She was great to work with because that's when her water breaks and they have to take her to the hospital.
Right, right.
So it was very strategic. But I remember Jennifer acknowledging the regulars on the 50th anniversary that Dick Clark had.
Wow.
And as far as dances and everything. So I made at J-Lo an honorary regular. And
oh,
I
wow.
gave her a membership card from Bandstand and made a little tiny plaque for her, and I gave it to her.
Fabulous. Well, you know, she was a fly girl, and she did get discovered for her dancing originally. So, you know, she's a little bit of a dancer herself.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, but so you started appearing in movies, and, you know, you that's how fabulous is that? Now, you were in a situation called No Ordinary Love Affair?
Yes, yes.
No Ordinary Love, because I wrote a song called This Is No Ordinary Love Affair.
Oh, this
believe
is-
it or not. And I wrote it for Paulette when I met Paulette.
This is no ordinary love affair. Angels sing, 'cause they've never seen a love as sweet as this. You and I, right from the start. You and I, we'll never part. You and I, together it's easy to see. This is no ordinary love affair. Can't believe all the passion and the magic when we kiss. This is no ordinary love affair. They've never seen a love as sweet as this. This is no ordinary love affair. This is no ordinary love affair. This is no ordinary love
Blade Warriors. What was that all about?
About a big monster. And at the end, I get killed at the end with Jack, who is my boyfriend, shooting me. And they had wrapped me up in the blood pack there.
Hey.
And I only took one take, Mike, because, man, I'll tell you, that gun went off and then the blood splattered on my top. And I just jumped up and just I died, and the director said I made the best dead person ever.
No kidding. Wow. Well, you know, not everybody can do a dead person. I've seen dead people in movies, and I say, lousy actor. Doesn't make a good dead person. Look, his pinky's moving, his eye is twitching. I mean,
it was cold, and it was on a very cold metal thing that I had to land on.
Wow.
But I just did all the yoga, everything that I knew, just to calm my body.
Ah, yeah. You stopped your heart for a couple of minutes.
Exactly. I just didn't want to go through being shot again. It was horrible.
Hey, but there is a saving grace. We both did the Joe Franklin show.
Yeah, Joe.
I was on Joe's show. As a matter of fact, somebody just wrote a book about him, and he this guy got in touch with me. I said, yeah, do you remember his office? It looks like a bomb went off in there. He had papers everywhere. It was really messy. And the guy said to me, you're actually being kind.
He's a hoarder. When, now that I'm watching these hoarder shows,
yeah.
Joe's a hoarder.
Yeah, really, really. And then Morton Downey, huh?
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I met Mort in Bermuda years ago. And he and his then, I'm trying to think, she was his wife at that time. Yeah, it was a young blonde. And they snuck their little Yorkie into the Hamilton Princess Hotel, which does not allow pets. And they said, we have the Yorkie, because we both took the breakfast plan, because food in Bermuda is very expensive. So they said, when you go there, go to the hotel, get the breakfast plan and load up on breakfast, because when you go out to eat dinner at night, it's going to be very expensive because they import the food. So we said, okay. We used to sit with them at breakfast, and I would say, how's the dog? And they'd say, shh, don't say anything. And the dog, you know, they instructed the dog not to bark in the room. But, of course, it was a Yorkie, so it used to bark anyway.
Oh.
Amazing story. So, and you were on Good Morning America.
Yes.
You were on with Suzanne Summers.
Yes, with Dick, and Chubby Checker was there, and we
wow.
all... And Geraldo Rivera.
I know Geraldo. As a matter of fact, that original Eyewitness News team in New York, that's where Geraldo started, and that was a very good team. I like Geraldo a lot.
Yes.
I really do. You know,
they brought the show that they brought me in for was it wasn't about an American Bandstand. It was what body parts do you like about a man?
Huh? No kidding.
Well, right.
And that was on Good Morning America.
No, that was on the Geraldo Rivera.
Oh, on Geraldo.
So I picked a chest because to me, always if a guy's got the big chest, he's going to protect you and save you, and that goes back to the father figure stuff or whatever. But they brought on this big muscle builder, and they said, and Geraldo said, "Bunny, okay, you like him?" I said, "Yeah, I'm going to take that man to
there
Vegas.
You go. I'm taking him home."
Yes.
that's interesting.
Well, you're bringing back some memories for me. Some of these things
Tell me about this leopard skin jacket of yours.
Oh, yes. It's maybe 50 feet from me in one of my drawers. For a museum.
Wow.
Yep.
Why is that so much of interest?
I wore it a lot on Bandstand. I have quite a few pictures in the teen magazines with it. And if I'm going to leave something for a memory as a keepsake, I'd be thrilled to have it in a museum for kids. The Pennsylvania Museum was thinking about putting an exhibit on for us. I don't know if that's still going ahead. There may be some financial reasons.
Right.
But I told them I would donate it to them or to someone, you know, just to give back to the kids. I just wanted to mention talking about giving back to the kids right now. I've been talking with a Royzen Burke and a Marissa Rogers, Marley Mullery, and a Chris Caraballo, Julio, and they're all from St. Nicholas School in Wilkes-Barre, and they're doing a show on the Revolution, Reaction, and Reform in History, and they feel Bandstand encompasses all that, and I've been helping them with their slide presentation and with all the information regarding Bandstand.
Wow.
That's another legacy, leopard jacket, or I talk to kids around the country, basically, because Peter Jennings in the Century book, they use that in high schools, and they gave me a page where I talk about Bandstand, and then one of the questions they get asked, how are times different now than they were for Bunny Gibson?
Wow.
I take a lot of pleasure in that, Mike, in helping kids around the country.
Well, working with kids, you know, as you know, I told you that I was a dean. I spent 30 years working with kids. Of course, in the Bronx where I was, every year the kids got worse and worse and the family situations got worse and worse. You know, it was very hard. I used to bring musical situations in there for the kids to watch, and seeing one of their teachers and one of the people that they looked up to on stage doing what they do as their other profession would really bring you closer to the kids, and they realized that teachers were real people rather than just people that stood up in front of the room, you know. Years ago, I was on a show called The Upbeat Show from Cleveland, and they had a guy by the name of Jeff Kutesh. And he had Jeff Kutesh and the Upbeat Dancers. I wonder how much the dancers on TV in one venue were familiar with some of the dances that were around the country on other shows.
I don't know. I know there. I think there's like Chicago Bandstand. There was Wink Martindale. There was something out here. I think somewhat aware.
You know, and my wife also tells me about a show from Maryland when she was younger. Where you had, you know, the same kind of a dance thing. But I think they all emerged out of American Bandstand.
Sure, yeah, that was the base foundation of the rock and roll revolution was American Bandstand.
Right. I mean, my wife, believe it or not, as modest as she is, she woke up one morning and found herself winning the Miss Maryland contest and then went to the Miss USA. And then went to the Miss World and was the runner-up in the Miss World contest. And, you know, so she has that, and she got to go USO with Bob Hope and Joey Heatherton and that kind of thing. And it was very, very interesting to me, you know. And then I learned, believe it or not, that my good friend John Madara in the old days was Joey Heatherton's boyfriend.
Oh.
And had a long affair with her from the time she was 18 and into her 20s when she was just, and she had such a fabulous voice and nobody knew it. I mean, she was, if you look on YouTube and pull up Joey Heatherton and listen to her sing, that was the best thing that she did.
And she was adorable.
Fabulous singer. But then she kind of took a left turn somewhere in her life, you know, like in later years. But, you know, that does happen sometimes, you know. I mean, not everybody's lucky enough to have stardom and then still have all their marbles at the end. Some people don't handle it.
Especially like, well, there's been so much done on child stars and how do you go back to the farm after you've seen Paris?
No, I know, because when everything is bigger than life, it's very tough to get back to life. That's one of the problems that we have with kids right now, is that everything is bigger than life, so that their own life seems mundane.
Exactly.
It's very hard.
Yes.
Are you in touch with Dick Clark these days?
I am. And
that's great.
The last wonderful acknowledgement he gave me is he thanked me for the work I've done on behalf of Bandstand and for the foster children.
Wow.
And that was quite wonderful. And we did a couple years ago, the L.A. Regulars and myself, we put together a birthday celebration for him.
Right. Now, when you say the Regulars, explain for people that are listening who the Regulars are.
Oh, they were the regular dancers either in Philly, and then we have our younger brothers and sisters here in L.A.
Yeah, the A-team.
Yeah, the 18th.
Right.
And so because we're all out here, we decided to celebrate his birthday, and the councilman came, and we did birthdays. He didn't come, but Carrie came, and his son came, and his daughter. And it was a wonderful day. So we do keep up with Dick. We have a 60th anniversary coming up, and now we're thinking about what we can do in honor of that.
Wow, because, you know, of course, Paul Ann and I do not go out on New Year's Eve. You know, we basically, what we do is, rather than getting caught in the fray, we went out last year and, you know, we decided again that New Year's Eve is probably time for us to just sit home. We usually boil up a couple of lobsters, make some fettuccine, drink some wine, and then we sit and we watch Dick Clark. And, you know, the last two or three years, for me personally, it's been very tough to listen to him count down. And I thought to myself, he needs to probably stop counting from 20 and just kind of plug in at 10. Because, you know, for people to try to remember him the way he used to be and to look at him now, you know, it's tough because, you know, we look at him as being very vibrant and whatever. And I give him all the credit in the world for being there and showing up. But it's hard for me remembering him the way I did, and then to look at him now, you know, it makes me feel bad.
Yeah, I understand.
How is he doing, actually?
Well, you know, his, you know, Carrie says he still goes to work. He built an office next to his house.
Right.
And he goes to work every single day. And what he really does live for is New Year's Eve. That's it.
Wow, that's fabulous.
To do that. And I remember her saying once that, I mean, he is a workaholic. When in earlier years, if she was driving, he was doing notes. If he was driving, he was dictating notes. He's more comfortable in front of the camera. I mean, that has been his life, and that's why he's been able to keep Bandstand alive for so long.
Wow.
Even with American Dreams, in doing that show, which was very, very popular. I don't think that they were consistent in keeping it each week, and that's what lost its audience somehow.
Right.
But it was about us.
No, I understand that. And, you know, I just, every American that grew up with that, just wants Dick Clark to be okay because, you know, he was, the poster child for, a guy that never aged, you know, so we want him to be safe and well.
Well, the first guy called him the youngest, he's a teenager, right?
Right.
He's a teenager. And we do, we have that image of him, and I understand. Yeah.
All right. But he did pave the way, and he also made it possible for a lot of groups to have hit records.
Without a question.
You know.
I mean, we look at our history, Mike, and we can thank Bob Horn in 1952 for believing that kids dancing to records could actually be a TV show.
Right.
They bought it. And then we can thank Dick Clark for having the business sense and the ability to bring it forth all these years.
Right. Now, you were on one of my wife's favorite TV shows, and that's How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, God, yes, I love that. That was like a couple of days where we did this big Broadway scene.
Great
in,
show.
In New York streets.
Right.
And, you know, and in one, we had to, like, throw ourselves down on the ground and jump up. And, Mike, I didn't get up as fast as everybody else. I got up. And Jason, I met him. I have my little picture with him.
It's right.
At my desk, Jason Siegel. He was
right.
Sweetheart, and I'll tell you one thing, Mike. I don't think when I go to my dancing auditions, because I was on Glee also.
You were on Glee.
And when I audition for these things, and actually some of them I get just because they know I'm an American Bandstand dancer. So
right.
Actually, Bandstand has really helped me in my later years here. But when I do audition, I am the happiest person there because I have the 50 years of remembering Studio B at 46 of Market Street. And here I am at the Debbie Reynolds Theater auditioning. And when you're in the hallways, you see the ballet dancers and everybody's warming up. And the energy of the place is like, I just am so grateful.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I can imagine that Without a Trace and CSI.
Yes.
That's not shabby, Bunny.
Oh, I mean, I'm there with Fergie's husband in the scene and Poppy Montgomery. This is pretty good.
Right? No, you know, you've done very well.
Yes, it was really wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Americans Sheltering Americans.
Yes.
ASAP. Great name.
Wow. How do you find out all these things? You're amazing. Whoa.
Everybody knows about Bunny Gibson, and those who don't, when they listen to our interview, they'll know as well. Tell me about ASAP.
Well, I spent a lot of time helping and feeding the homeless, and Al Martinez wrote an article about that in the LA Times. And what sticks out in my mind mostly is my friend had a business where he would get secondhand things or they're going out of business. Anyhow, he got a whole big truckload of ice creams and everything, and I packed my car, and my friend's car, actually, it was a convertible, and we went downtown, and I looked up, and we had all these hands coming at us. It was like something you would see in a third world country, that this can't be America. But I just, when I saw that, and for many other reasons, it's even a homeless man, you know, saying hello to me and looking back at him and me smiling, saying hi. And he thanked me, Mike. He thanked me because I just acknowledged him.
No, I understand. You know, I was actually in La Jolla years ago. And, you know, what's funny is that I saw this guy on the street and it bothered me. I went into a Starbucks, and I was with a bunch of people, and then I came out, and I kind of invited him in, and I went over to the people behind the counter, and I said, I want this man to order anything that he wants. I don't care what it is. If he orders a dozen bagels, if he orders 24 donuts, if he orders, you know, just give him whatever he wants and put it on my tab. And the guy was so thankful because he didn't solicit me.
Mm-hmm.
It was my idea. You know, I mean, even here in Florida, in Boca, in Palm Beach County and whatever, you have guys on the street corner and whatever, and they have their signs, I'm homeless, this and that. I'm not probably not going to roll down the window for the guy that drapes himself all over my car. But if a guy is standing there and he's, you know, and he's just, you know, you get that feeling that this guy really is in trouble, you know, I'll roll down the window and hand him a 20. I've been known to do that. And my wife as well, she, you know, and but what I don't like are the guys that, you know, throw themselves under your wheels.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's it's a tough call. Nobody should be homeless and nobody should be hurting. You know, let's start with that. I mean, it's a tough.
Many of us a couple of paychecks throughout the country, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of your favorite music. I know that you were really in love with Elvis.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's fun to say Elvis, you know. There was nobody named Elvis when Elvis came on.
How many hours do you want?
Oh, okay. I don't have to have it. Okay.
Just hold it up. That's good.
I got some. I'm all shook up.
You should have one in there, man. Should have one in there that you can use.
I remember watching him for the first time, believe it or not, on the Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey show, which was before Ed Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a little kid, and I said, wow, look at this guy. You know, he's shaking his thing, and then, of course, Ed Sullivan, and, you know, who was bigger than Elvis?
Right. He gave us permission to feel good about our bodies and just shake our booties and just shake all over.
Yeah, well.
Wonderful.
Was Elvis ever on Bandstand?
No.
Interesting.
He did make a phone call into Bandstand, you know, Colonel Parker.
Yeah, he was tough.
Yeah, he was tough. So, wow, I could imagine. I would love to have that as a memory. I've gone to one of his concerts with my mom and my daughters, but that's it.
Well, you know, it's funny, but Colonel Parker had this theory that too much exposure was not good.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pulled the reins in and he said, you know, I don't want people to see him on TV. I want people to pay to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was Colonel Parker's thing. And, you know, I guess we lost out.
It is generally conceded, Colonel Parker, and to those who don't know it, let's tell them right now that Elvis's success was part Elvis, part Colonel Parker. Which part was yours? Because that was the less visible part.
I think mine was the least part.
But explain it to me. What was it? What did you do for him to help bring him to the public's attention?
I did all the promotion, the outdoor advertising, and he did the show on the stage, and the fans made it possible. You can promote all you want to, but if the people don't want to buy a ticket, it doesn't help. So I did my part, Elvis did his show, and we were lucky. Great talent, and we had a great show and a lot of fun.
Now, let me ask you something. In this day and age, in the 1980s, it would be unthinkable that a star of Elvis Presley's magnitude would not end up on the Johnny Carson show, on the Merv Griffin show, on half the talk shows around the country. You deliberately kept him back a little bit from that kind of exposure. Why did you do that?
Well, I like to correct you. I kept him back, but I didn't do it deliberately. I found out some of my friends, they had artists, they put them on all the shows, talk shows for free, and they had a hard time getting a job after that.
So you thought it was just a bad, that it was bad promotion, even though it got someone very well known, that it ultimately didn't work out for the best?
Well, I felt it was good for us not to go on although all these fellas were good friends of mine, but when you go on these shows, most of the time they book people when they're big stars, so they don't hurt them too much. But we were starting out, and it wouldn't have helped us any, which has proven because we did all right without him.
Yeah, you did terrific without him. It is, you've got critics, you know that. You have them. Even Elvis has critics. Your critics say that you held him back, that he could have been much more of an actor, for example, than he ultimately, you know, was given a chance to be.
Well,
because you put him in those kind of, beach bikini, jailhouse rock type movies.
Well, if whoever said that is fine. They can say what they want to. If I was them, if they know so much, they ought to go in the management business.
Well, you tell me about it. I mean, was he perfectly content? I mean, was it a matter of his knowing his own level, knowing his own limitations, or was it just
I didn't know what he knew all of it, but he knew that he could do whatever he wanted to, and nobody told Elvis Presley what to do, because he was a very strong person, and we had a great relationship, but I took care of mine, he took care of his, and he didn't let anybody tell him what to do.
Could he have been a really great actor? Could he have become a fine dramatic actor, do you think? Did he have that kind of ability?
You know, Ted, you're right, but you know, one time at one studio, we had a great producer, the late Jerry Walt, you remember him?
Sure do.
And he came to us with a script, and he told Elvis that if we did this picture, he would be practically assured of an Academy Award, but they could not pay us the money that we wanted because the script was so expensive. So I told him that we usually stay home during the Academy Award, and he pays us our money, and if he bought us the Oscar, I give him his money back, and I never saw him again.
Okay, now what about the songs? I am told that he could sit there and listen to a stack of demos, and 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 would go by, and then he'd say, that's the one, I want that one, and that he had kind of an unerring instinct for what was good and right for him musically.
Yeah. Ted, as long as I was with Elvis Presley, I never was involved with what songs he was going to record. Very seldom I was ever in the studio. He picked his own songs with the songwriters, whatever they were. And he never asked me, should I do this or that? It was up to him. He liked it that way. The only song that I was able to have him record, because I thought it was good for him, was Are You Lonesome Tonight. That's the only one.
Step back for a moment and do what I know so many people who are watching tonight would like you to do, and that is explain, if you can, the Elvis phenomenon. Not just while he was alive, but here we are 10 years after his death, and if anything, he's a bigger star than he ever was.
I don't think I can explain it, Ted. It's been 10 years since Elvis passed away. When he passed away, I was on tour. I had to stay behind, close out all the tours. But I've been for 10 years doing nothing except consulting work and working on keeping Elvis's name in the limelight with the fans because they're devoted. I've talked to over 1,000 in the last 4 days here. I did interviews, and it's unexplainable. They say anybody else could have done it. Perhaps so. But I was happened to be the one that was with him. He did his part, I did mine, and there is no answer for that.
When all is said and done now, was he happy with his career? Was he satisfied with his career, or was there any emptiness left?
Well, I don't know, but I know one thing. When I told us to slow down, he said, I want to play more dates, so I booked more dates. I said, well, I don't think you should, and he said, well, that's what I want to do, and I quit for a while, and he was very unhappy, so we started all over again.
Colonel Parker, thanks very much.
Thank you.
But, you know, from American Bandstand, you know, where you could see your favorite artist, and just about everybody was on there, you know, a lot of shows grew out of that, you know, Rock Concert with Don Kirshner and Shindig and Hullabaloo, and, you know, really and truly, that really did grow out of American Bandstand.
Yeah, exactly.
All of that stuff.
Well, you asked me about some of my favorite songs, and I'm actually going to have the pleasure of being on stage with some of these guys. But when you talk about the Reflections, Romeo and Juliet.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. finding a job tomorrow morning. Got a little something I wanna do. Gonna buy something I could ride in. I take my girl, take looking at the driving. I'm gonna buy her pretty presents, just like the ones in a catalog. Gonna show how much I love her. I'll let her know one way or the other. Our love's gonna be written down in history, just like Romeo and Juliet. Myself straight. I'm gonna put Romeo's fame right smack dab on the date. All right, now I'm speculating, wonder what tomorrow's gonna really bring. If I don't find work tomorrow, it's gonna be heartaches and sorrow. Harlow's gonna be destroyed by a tragedy, just like Romeo.
Lead singer of The Reflections. You're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
You know, my good friend Mark Stern wrote that song.
Really?
From Detroit. Yeah, he was working for Motown. When he sold Keiko Records, he sold all the songs, all the publishing and everything with it. Hmm. And so Tony McCalley, my buddy, and Mark Stern, I put them on the radio together, and they told the whole world that story. It was interesting. Because nobody really knows. You know, somebody else's name is on the record. Berry Gordy actually put his friends' names on there when he bought the entire record company.
Ah.
Interesting story. So Romeo and Juliet, wow, and they're still working and having a ball. They were in Florida recently.
Yeah, what Francona is doing is putting us all together and go out there and bring some smiles to everybody's hearts, and we can all become teenagers again.
Yeah, my good friend Francona, who I talk to about two or three times a week, and you know, he calls me up. I give him the best advice I possibly can, and he'll call me up in the afternoon and say, "Mike, here's the scenario. I got this and this and this and this. What do you think?" And I say, "Well, let's see. Move your pawn, and then like move your queen over here, and then go in, you know, for the checkmate over here."
Huh.
And you know, that's
good advice.
that's the way it goes, you know. As far as that's concerned. So what are some of your favorite tunes?
Well, the Ramadama Ding Dong, as silly as that is, the Edsels.
Remel and the Ding Dong, believe it or not, that's my interview that I'm running this week, believe it or
not. Oh.
Ramalama-lama-lama-ding-dong.
Ding dong, I'll never set up.
Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Rem Lem and Ding Dong, great choice. Actually, they told me that they were inspired for that tune by Blue Moon by the Marcells.
Oh, great song. Yeah, Blue Moon.
Right.
Boom, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon. Moon, moon, moon.
Bomb a 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 dang 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 a ding a dong ding boom 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 boom
original Vandellas dancing in the street and all their great, great, great dancing.
Hi, I'm Rosalind.
And I'm Annette. And we're the original Vandellas. And you're listening to our good friend, Mike Miller,
on the Harmony Street Show.
You know, so many great songs to dance to. I guess when you're a singer and you're a dancer, you look at tunes differently, you know. Like I say, I was always a really good mover on the dance floor and on the bandstand, but not really a serious dancer. What other tunes were tunes that you loved to listen to?
A Million to One.
A Million to One.
Million to One.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Charles.
Yes, they pay me not to sing, so I don't think I better do any more of it.
Yeah, and it's a very hard song to sing. It goes by, and it sounds easy to sing, but there are not too many people out there actually singing the song. I worked with Jimmy about 5 years ago, a real sweet man. I'm sure he was on Bandstand as well.
Yes, he was.
A million to one, that's what our folks think about this love.
Absolutely. Still.
Oh, our heartthrobs. Yes.
Still.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, Jimmy Clanton is making a big comeback now. He's got a new CD out, and he sent me some teasers, and I made him a promo. But Jimmy sounds so good on that CD. It's amazing to me, you know, because you know, some of the guys have lost a step. But some of them are still so fantastic, and we've lost a few. I know... my good friend Johnny Maestro, who I know, you know, 50 years, you know, we lost him very recently, but I know he was on Bandstand with the Crests and so many others. I know Jimmy Clanton was on Bandstand as well.
Yeah. What a joy. Right. I mean, it was the mecca of the rock and roll era.
Jimmy's tune, you know, I remember him singing Venus in Blue Jeans on Bandstand.
She's Venus in blue jeans, talking work of art. She's the girl who stole my heart. My Venus in blue jeans is a Cinderella I adore. She's my very special angel too, a fairy tale come true. They say there's seven wonders in the world, but what they say is out of date. More than seven wonders in the world, I just met number eight. My Venus in blue jeans is everything I hope she'd be. A teenage goddess from above.
That was a great tune, you know.
Yes, yes, it was.
And he had that baby face. He still has a baby face. He just has gray hair now.
Ah.
You know. But it's nice to see how many of the people that we really loved growing up are still around and doing it. Another good friend of mine from the Bronx, little Anthony and Clarence from Anthony and the Imperials. I mean, still singing just as good as they did then. You know, they'll be in Boca very soon, and we're going to see them. So, Bunny, you're going to be hopefully taking the stage a little bit and telling your story and showing up at doo-wop and oldie concerts.
Yes, yes. Frank has been pretty terrific. He's putting all this together, and I think it's going to be a really feel-good event that we're going to do. Again, bringing back that teenager back in all our hearts, and let's rock and roll and bring back those days again.
Well, it's like I said, you know, you must have within you hundreds of little stories that if you thought about it for a while, you would say to yourself, oh, yeah, gee, I remember that one, I remember that one. Because people love to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff with American Bandstand. And how was it really? Was it really all that glamorous, or was it sometimes, well, for you as a young girl, they opened the doors and you just did what you did best, which was to dance to the records.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I've known as, I think, the one who smiled the most. When I was dancing, I was happy. I was unaware of anything else that was going on around me at the studio at times, and certainly anything at home or anything. It surpassed. It gave me such tremendous joy.
Right. Well, I know Bandstand, if I remember, was about an hour long.
Yes, it was. It was actually, it went on at 3, and then it was interrupted by two shows, Do You Trust, and then Beat the Clock, and then it would come back at 4 o'clock.
Well, Who Do You Trust, that was the Johnny Carson version,
yes,
of that show? Yeah, I remember.
Do You Trust Your Wife, and then...
Right, right, I remember that.
And then at the end of our show, Dick would always end up saying he was, the mouse is coming, and do a little salute, and then on came that great Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah, I remember that as well. Now, do you ever remember having to stop what you're doing and reshoot a record or reshoot a song or redo something or have a group not get it on the first take? Were you aware of things that went on like that?
No, I don't remember, other than when Paul Anka, when Dee Dee Dinah, and the record kept on skipping. You know, the da, 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 da.
That's
other
funny.
Than that, no, nothing stands out on my mind. I loved shoot, maybe this Chuck Berry doing the moonwalk, you know, and things like that, or right. that little dance he used to do.
Well, Lloyd Price told me a story about not being able to sing all the words to Stagger Lee because there were a couple of lines in there that Dick didn't like. And they did something about it. I don't remember what they did about it. I think Lloyd Price wound up getting his own way with that one. But, you know, I guess the production was very careful about what they let through and what they didn't.
Yes, that's true. And you know. Stagger Lee, I used to love that song.
You know,
it's a real, real killing drama. And yet it was a great, great beat and great to dance to. Just
right. Great beat, easy to dance to. What about, well, you know, and when you think of all the dance crazes that went through, now you had the Locomotion.
Hmm?
Let's talk about some of those dances. Locomotion, the slop, the fly. The fly, the Bristol stomp, which, you know.
Stroll.
Let's not forget about the stroll.
Right.
Well, they did a great job, you know, now. Let me ask you about the stroll on American Bandstand. Did they just, did the kids just get together and do that, or did they actually rehearse their little moves for that?
Oh, no. I had to think that maybe it was in the Philly water, but we just knew how to dance.
I hear you.
It's you know, someone say, here's a new step, or we're doing this or that, and we just did it. It wasn't like what you're talking about, where you're going to a dance studio and you're getting all the dance steps taught to you.
Right.
It just came so naturally to us.
Right, right, right. That's really interesting.
Go to the dances and see some of the black kids with a new dance, and we would do what they were doing and then bring it to Bandstand, and that happened with the twist.
Wow.
Brought the twist there. So Hank Ballard was singing it.
Absolutely.
Saw us doing that, and he said, "What's that?" He saw that it was going to be a good thing. And then after that, Chubby Checker, he was given that song, and it's lasted till today.
Right. Well, what about my good friend Joey D. Nicola, Joey D.? He was on American Bandstand.
Yeah.
The Peppermint Twist.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was at the Peppermint Lounge.
Oh, there you go. Me too. I was there too.
We borrowed, of course, somebody's birth certificate because I was like 15.
Ah.
Or 21 maybe even. I don't know. But there we were in the Peppermint Lounge.
Wow.
Well, we got a new dance and it goes like this. Hello, everybody. Joey D. from the Starlight is here. And you're listening to me and my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Dances that we did. The Watusi, the... You know, well, you know, Chubby Checker actually told me that with the fly, they were using an electric razor and a microphone.
Oh.
That's where they got the
zzzz. Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah, you know, because I really never knew that. You know, Bunny, I know because I'm kind of in the genre and, you know, you listen to some of the things that are said. And, of course, you know, American Bandstand is an institution. And of course, there is a wonderful nucleus to the people that actually made American Bandstand come alive and have, you know, really kept it in the forefront, you know, for years and years. But I understand that, you know, as the years go by, that there are people who have latched on and kind of hang on. And some of them are taking credit for some of the things that went on, where probably credit is not due. Would you like to touch on that for a moment?
Well, just barely, probably, Mike, because I like to take the high road. And I can only say about the regulars, I mean, we all live through a magical time with our fans across the country. We all brought in rock and roll.
Right.
We lived, the dichotomy of our life was that we were loved across the country, and we did pay a price in Philly, whether we were getting beat up or death threats or we had to leave schools or whatever, we paid the price to dance on that show.
Right.
So, I mean, we earned the name The Regulars, you know, and we're all proud of it today. And it's our history, and sometimes you do. You have people trying to take it over, or you try to for their own means. Or even imposters, it's like, yes, I went, and then we're all looking at each other, hello, I didn't ever see them, you know?
Right. There really is only one nucleus of people that surrounded Dick Clark and were there, you know, during the important days, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, and if they're going to have, if we're going to leave a legacy to, like, these kids in Wilkes-Barre or whatever, it should be one of us who really can leave it because it is our legacy and do justice by it. So I guess that's what I stand up for, that we, that it is us, and that our, anything that comes from us is respected. It's a matter of decency and respect.
No, I understand that. And, Dick Clark Productions, they run a tight ship, and I know that they like to keep everything under wraps and, you know, everything in its place. And I know Dick Clark, even though he's having, you know, some difficulty at this point in his life and whatever, is still very much at the helm of everything that goes on.
Yes.
So, you know, that's, I guess that's very important.
You know, I wanted to tell you, I mean, if people want to see a little excerpt from Van Stand and me, you can, Tai Cheng, it's a version of Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cheng, I did his infomercial. They actually trained me for 3 months.
Wow.
On Tai Chi. So, it will be on, I think, starting next month, and you'll be able to see myself and the other older people doing our Tai Cheng, and they're going to have a little clip from Van Stand, probably of Steve Colanero, who lives down there in Florida now.
You right.
You two should go golfing together.
Uh-huh.
And myself dancing.
Oh, that's fabulous. So, you know, really and truly, the dancers who were the A-team, the regulars on Van Stand, most of them, for most of them, dancing is still part of their lives and that creativity and that expression.
Oh, yes. I think anything that impacts you like that, especially at a vulnerable teenage year, it is. It stays with you. You know, Mike, they even say when you go in old age homes that when they play the music of when you were a teenager, they see the heart rate going better, they see the blood pressure getting better.
Well,
it just helps heal you inside. It makes you younger.
I sang with a bunch of groups in my life. I started when I was 15. And, you know, I'm still doing it, you know, to some degree. But I had a group called Harmony Street, and that was three ladies and myself and a bass singer. And we did some wonderful things. But we used to do the nursing homes. And two things used to happen there. First of all, I would say, everybody put their hearing aids on 5, and I'll control it from here. And they thought that was funny.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing was the amazing amount of people in wheelchairs that danced in their wheelchairs.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And I know that you did something like that on TV, did you not?
Yes, I did, and I've done it at dances. And I entered a dance contest with somebody in a wheelchair. And I tell them, yes, you can. You can dance with your hands and your head and your
right.
arms. And still feel that music.
Well, if they play wheelchair basketball, now let's get one thing straight. You're not in a wheelchair, but you but you do use that as a prop sometimes.
Yes. Oh, yes. I chose that. You know why? For Glee? Because I figured it'd be easy when they're looking down. I don't know how they're going to cut this, even though I did 2.5 days.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She's in the wheelchair. And because none of the other dancers wanted to do it because, they don't. And I'm okay about that. You can see me in the wheelchair. And actually last week I did makeup, 2-hour makeup where they made me look like I was 105.
Wow.
I'm okay about all that. I love to do.
Wow. Modest. How modest are you?
No. The makeup said, do whatever you want to do.
Uh-huh. So your plans are to, go out there and talk about and make people aware of the fact that American Bandstand, should live forever on the minds of all the people that enjoyed it, in those days, and possibly make the new generations aware of how all of that started.
Yes, yes, through like working with the kids at the high school or the colleges, or when Frank Kona with what he's putting together for the stage shows, and maybe we're like the Dr. Oz's of the rock and roll group, because I do believe when people leave that show for the next day, they're going to get up and feel peppier and happier because they danced to the music of their teen years. And heard the music of their teen years again.
Wow.
I'm very excited about that. And
Bunny, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you or talk to you or hire you to come and be part of their show or just to get in touch with Bunny Gibson, how would they do that?
Well, a couple of different ways. I mean, you can email me. My site is bunnygibson.com. So you just bunny@bunnygibson.com or Frank Kona, 586-854-6092 or bunny@bunnygibson.com. And if they could do one really big favor for me, are you familiar with IMDb.com? Well, anyone can go into IMDb.com. That's the International Movie Database. And if you put in my name, you can actually see, or myself or any actor, director, producer, you can see all their credits.
And oh, yes, I am familiar with that. Yes, I am, now that you mention it. Uh-huh.
Whoever, if your listeners would be nice enough to go into Bunny Gibson at IMDb.com and just put in the right-hand side of the page, they say like. That would be terrific. That helps my ratings to be able to do more TV shows.
Uh-huh, because you have a long, long list of credits there to your name.
Yes, yes.
Yes, you do, and you've had a wonderful career. Bunny, it's been my pleasure talking to you. Let's keep in touch, and, of course, let me know what's going on with your career and what's going on with your wonderful friends at American Bandstand. Please keep me posted on Dick Clark. And let's talk real soon.
Okay, Mike, and could I have one special request?
Absolutely.
Okay, for the foster children, I give dance contests for foster kids, and I have like 1,000 of them coming. And I tell them they're all winners. I want them to all get prizes. They just have to shake their booty on stage. And so if anyone would like to donate a stuffed animal or whatever, you know, for kids, ages 5 to teens, I would be just thrilled. And they could email me, bunny@bunnygibson.com. There is a nonprofit. And the kids, you'd be putting a smile on kids' faces.
Well, that's fabulous. And I really appreciate spending this time with you.
Likewise, Mike. You've been an interviewer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. American Bandstand was part of my childhood, and you've really made me feel warm and wonderful about it. It's just been a wonderful thing. It was part of Americana and will always be.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, thank you, Bob Horn. Thank you, Dick Clark. And thank you to all the wonderful regulars who participated to lead a nation in dancing, fashion, and hairstyles and everything. We were part of a real special time in history.
I agree with you 100%. Well, thank you so much, Bunny.
Welcome, Mike.
Take care now. You be safe and be well.
Okay, you too. Okay, God bless.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Ciao.
This is Mike Miller. Good night from the Harmony Street Show. www.harmonystreet.biz.
Open up your heart. Recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found. Ooh.
On Harmony Street. Ooh. There was a place that we used to go. When we were feeling down and we were low. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Was it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's hearts. Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Was it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how